and Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule to be with us tonight. I think we have a really good show for you, and it's going to be a show that I've not done anything else like this on this particular topic, except one time about, 10 years ago. So it's going to be new information for you. I hope you enjoy it. I know you'll be able to use it. And I want to welcome Leslie Alexander and Linda Straw Bruce, and we're going to talk about their book, Dental Herbalism, Natural Therapies for the Mouth, Early Detection and Prevention of What Goes On in Your Mouth, and ultimately your overall health. Welcome, ladies, and thanks for taking time to be with us. If each of you would take just a second to tell us your background and what you do, and then I'd like for you to just go to town, if that's all right with you.
Oh, thanks so much, Eva. Good evening. My name is Leslie Alexander, and I am a practicing herbalist in northwestern Pennsylvania. I have a general practice here. I'm also an educator and a member of two organizations which have a direct bearing on what we're talking about tonight, the American Herbalist Guild and the American Society for Oral and Systemic Health. And as a herbalist, I saw that there was a relationship between the health of the body and the health of the mouth. I got curious. Herbs for the mouth have been around for millennia, and I had the very, very good fortune to hook up with Linda Straub Bruce, who's a professional dental hygienist, not too far from where I am. We make a great working team, and together we wrote Herbs for the Mouth. That's about it, isn't it, Linda?
That sounds good to me, Leslie. I'm Linda Straub Bruce, and I've been a registered dental hygienist for 25 years. I graduated from the University of Pittsburgh here in Pennsylvania, Pitt Dental School, with my degree in dental hygiene, and then I continued on and got a bachelor's degree in education from Edinburgh University of Pennsylvania. And I am also a public health dental hygiene practitioner. I administer local anesthesia. I'm in the American Dental Hygienist Association. I also am in the American Academy for Oral Systemic Health, a great organization. I'm in the Pennsylvania Academy of Dental Hygiene Studies and the National Dental Practice-Based Research Network. I do a lot of community involvement. I do a lot of dental health education in my community, be it from the younger kids in the schools all the way up to the nursing home. So I have seen it all in private practice and in what I've done in my community.
Well, and so we made this, we discussed this idea of going forward, working with herbs. Increasingly, more and more of the population are coming back to natural remedies. More and more people are wanting to take charge of their own health. And it was important, I thought, that we write a book about that could be used as a practical guide, Eva, as a resource about how to work with herbs for the mouth. And so together, we decided to address three audiences. One is the general public, people who do wish to look for alternative interventions for a healthy mouth and also a diseased mouth. And what else? Linda?
Well, I think also, too, we wanted to provide reliable information from both perspectives, because there's a lot out there on the internet, and sometimes it's not the most reliable. So you may have a dental appointment, or you may not have been to the dentist for a while, but we wanted to provide solid information to guide anybody in the right direction with the current research and what we know as far as prevention, and then kind of answer some treatment questions, and then how to maintain after treatment. So wherever you are in your scale of oral health, it's been addressed in our book, and that was our goal.
It's a wonderful book.
Excellent.
It
and
really
then
is a wonderful
the
book.
Other two audiences we wrote for, Eva, were dental professionals and herbal professionals. I'll speak to herbal professionals. I trained as a holistic practitioner, and very little of my attention was on the mouth. Its anatomy and physiology, or herbs for the mouth, or specifically where my interest lies in the link between oral and systemic health. So I wanted to provide a resource for herbalists to bring these things together, and not just in a herbal consultation to perform a tongue diagnosis, for example, or a visual assessment of a client, but I saw it as increasingly important that we work in the mouth, on the mouth, and throughout the rest of the body.
Well, that's kind of what sent me on the search looking for you guys. Well, not looking for you, but what cued me up when I ran across your book and whatever material your publicist sent me. I had a massive heart attack 3.5 years ago. And now that I look back, I know that I always had problems with my molars ever since I was in my teens and had a root canal like when I was 19. Those very back teeth removed. I can't think of what the ones they always take
the
out.
The wisdom teeth?
Yeah.
Wisdom teeth?
Sorry. Couldn't find those words. And so now I look back and see that, oh, my God, all these years I had chronic infection below those. I did have a root canal later, below that root canal, and my dentist didn't do it right, and I didn't know any better. So what can people start looking for early? when they're 19 or 20 and leaving home and not necessarily having insurance today, because none of the kids have insurance today, really good insurance. What can these kids look for? What can their parents and grandparents do when they're in their 50s now and it's time for their health, you know, to start changing? How can they better it?
Well, what I would say with that is, you want to go ahead, Leslie?
Go ahead.
Okay. What I would say with that is when you're younger, the focus is on decay. And decay, as far as fresh decay on a brand new tooth, usually is for the younger population. But once you get to be in your late teens, early 20s, it's not as prevalent. Our body chemistry changes, and then we have to start paying a little more attention to either A, old dental work wearing down, barring accidents or injuries, but then we start working a little more about gingivitis and periodontitis. So what I would say to a 19-year-old who's leaving home, that it's not about how many cavities you've had. You know, if you've never had a cavity, it doesn't mean you're in the clear. You still have to go in and get a good dental exam and prevent the first stage of gum disease, which is gingivitis, which eventually can work into further stages of gum disease called periodontitis. And the reason why that is, and that rings true with your situation, Eva, is any kind of chronic inflammation in the body is a burden to the rest of the body. It's a burden on the immune system. It opens us up for other problems. So if you have a chronic inflammation in your mouth, especially when you're talking about gum disease or ulcerated tissues or infection, those tissues can open up into the bloodstream a whole, you know, slew of bacteria and inflammatory mediators. The mouth is a portal to the bloodstream, the digestive tract, and the respiratory tract. So if there's disease or inflammation going on in the mouth, it will affect the body, including the heart.
It's interesting. We can draw a parallel, for example, because most people don't see that every tooth is connected to our entire body. So if we were to move away from the mouth, but briefly, and to think about a person who's out jogging and takes a fall and scrapes their shin, and one of the important things they do after that is to clean the
scrape. Why do they clean the scrape? Well, they clean it to remove infectious organisms, pathogens, dirt and debris that might give rise to inflammation locally around the scrape and also systemically, what is commonly called blood poisoning. So if we think about it, some of us, in the course of our daily hygiene, might experience some bleeding as a result of brushing or flossing. Some of us might get an injury which affects the mouth during a sporting event, for example, or as a result of an accident or a trauma. And it has been said that there are as many organisms, or indeed more organisms in the mouth than there are on the planet Earth. So by organisms or microorganisms, we mean very, very tiny, invisible bacteria, fungi, and viruses, for example, to name but a few. So when we bleed in the mouth, just like when we bleed on the shin, we're susceptible to getting the systemic inflammation, which can then present in the circulatory system or the cardiovascular system.
So I have a question now. One of the things my dentist, anytime I've ever complained about in my early years, was that my gums were worrying, I was brushing too hard. Which way do you move your toothbrush?
We see this all the time. My preferred way is a small circular motion with the bristles about 45 degrees from the gums. But I will tell you, it's not necessarily whether you're going vertical, horizontal, or in small circles. It's the amount of pressure that you're putting on. It's how heavy-handed you are. Or if you're using medium or hard bristles. We are keeping our teeth longer today. We are brushing them more often and taking care of them more often today than we had in history. So with all of that, the gums cannot hold up to the abrasion. Enamel can. You're not typically going to abrade your enamel off. Enamel is susceptible to one thing, and that's acid. So what happens is if you're brushing really aggressively or you're using a hard toothbrush or even a medium, you can cause those gums to recede back. It exposes the root surface of the tooth that isn't covered by that hard protective enamel. And then it can actually start wearing into the root. So a lot of people, I see this every week in my private practice with my patients. I tell them, take your fingernail right up on that gum line. If you feel a little notch in there, you're probably brushing too hard and wearing into it. And the unfortunate part about that is the gums don't grow back. So that is something that we want to be really conscientious with to prevent, because once you lose it, it's gone for good.
Well, I have to say a comment here then, before we go any further. My gums had gone up so far that I needed gum transplants, and my dentist said, your gums aren't going to grow back. I didn't accept that. So I came home, and I mixed up a concoction. I took vitamin C powder, some colloidal silver, and some hydrogen peroxide. I put the colloidal silver and the C powder together, and then I took food-grade hydrogen peroxide, and I took a drop and put it on a Q-tip and clean the fronts and clean the backs of the gum. Then I packed that after, and just long enough for it to start burning. Then I rinsed it off. You know, as soon as I got it on there, almost I rinsed it off. Then I packed that C and that colloidal silver onto directly to my gums and closed my lips until it dissolved, and they grew back within 6 months. There's a ridge there. You can see the ridge where they grew back.
Yep. Grafting is usually done in the extreme cases.
And I didn't have any grafts.
Yep. And if you catch it, if you catch it early enough, when you just start seeing that abrasion before the deeper connective tissue rods are lost, you can retain it. But once you cut all the way through, then it won't grow back.
Okay.
You're right.
You know, one of the things we talk about, Eva, in dental herbalism is our is the importance of vitamin C. And vitamin C helps build collagen. Collagen's a really important protein when it comes to the mouth. And so we talk not only about diet in general, but we give examples about the ways in which we can incorporate food as well as herbs into our daily fare. But as Linda was talking earlier about brushing techniques, we also cover that in dental herbalism. Not only do we provide pictures about how to brush, but we give herbal recipes about tooth powders and mouth rinses and mouth washes, so that pre and post a dental exam, for example, anyone can put together a herbal rinse to address their mouths before and after an intervention.
So where would you, excuse me, I seem to have allergies this week, I don't know why. I'm going to let you guys just talk now, because I know you have a lot to say and I don't want to interrupt you anymore if I can keep from it. What would be the first step now that you would do to early detect and prevent? What does somebody look for that's not really there yet, that there are telltale signs, and what do they do? And take us through the steps of till you're 70 or 80, hopefully.
I can give you some of the symptoms of gum disease, and then I'll let Leslie talk about some of the preventions, because really with adults, especially adults over 30, it's gum disease. That's where it is all at. Bleeding is number one. If we washed our hair and our scalp bled when we washed it, it would be really concerning. And what I've said before, and I'll say it again, is that somehow it became acceptable that bleeding in the mouth when you brush or floss is normal. It actually isn't. If the tissue is tight and healthy, not inflamed, there's not a lot of tartar or buildup along the gums, under the gums, a bacterial load, those gums should not bleed during brushing or flossing or when your dental professional does an exam. If you have inflammation, if you have redness, if you have discomfort in the tissue, swelling, healthy gums have an orange peel effect that we in dentistry call stippling. And those, Eva, are those connective rods that we were talking about. If the connective rods are in place, you can get some abrasion to recover. Once you cut through those connective rods, it's almost like an amputation. It's gone. So you're looking for like an orange peel effect. That means there's no inflammation. You're looking for bad breath. Gum disease is a painless process. A lot of people believe that if I'm really that bad, I'll feel it. It will hurt. You don't know. And when it does become painless, when it becomes painful, usually at that point it's too late. So Leslie has some wonderful herbs that, in addition to getting a dental exam so that someone can take a look at your gums, measure your gums, see if there's buildup, see if there's irritation, you can do these things to help keep your gums in best health and prevent those type of things.
Well, so throughout this, all of these interventions, vitamin C is very, very important. And we can use herbal teas or infusions to make both mouthwashes and rinses. And then those might be most applicable for healthy teeth and gums, as well as early stages of gingivitis. But as we move into early, moderate, and advanced stages of periodontitis, then we most probably would look to tinctures and decoctions. And throughout this whole gamut of different stages of health in the mouth, we can look to herbs like calendula, which is an excellent anti-inflammatory. It's also an excellent antifungal. Yarrow, in particular, is marvelous anti-inflammatory. And it is also a styptic, or what some people might call a hemostat. So it helps us as herbalists control bleeding in the mouth. And myrrh, while we have looked to myrrh for millennia when it comes to choosing a good antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal, antimicrobial herb to work in the mouth. We can vary our formula for rinses and for various stages of periodontitis or gingivitis, or indeed a healthy mouth. Let's not forget that also. By choosing herbs based upon their actions. So we talk, for example, about analgesic herbs. We might look there to capsicum or cayenne or cinnamon or myrrh to relieve pain. And at least two of these can be found in a common kitchen cupboard. And I think one of the strengths, Eva, about dental herbalism, natural therapies for the mouth, is that of the 41 herbs we present in the Materia Medica, we chose to focus more than half on culinary herbs, herbs that would be found in a regular kitchen, thereby ensuring safety, improving access, and we provide a host of directions for making tinctures and decoctions, whether it's a combination of, for example, golden seal and plantain, which we could use during the early and moderate stages of periodontitis, or, for example, in later stages, we might want to combine barberry and capsicum, as well as oak and cinnamon, perhaps adding some myrrh, to help eliminate the inflammation, the redness, to help tighten or astringe the tissues. And that's really an important aspect of any protocol, Linda, isn't it? Astringing and tightening the gums around the teeth.
Yep, so, exactly. Yep. Did you have a question, Eva?
Yeah, I do. In your book, and you just now mentioned it just now, in we use these particular herbs in earlier stages or these particular herbs in later stages. Why would you use them earlier or later? I mean, what is it about it that makes it not good for earlier and makes it good for later or vice versa, so we understand that?
Oh, okay. So in the when we have healthy gums, they hold the teeth tightly, they're pink, they're not inflamed, they're not soggy, there is no redness, they're not bleeding, they're not sensitive to hot and cold generally. So we might then wish to maintain the biofilm and the composition of microbes in the mouth. Would that be a fair way of saying that, Linda?
Yes, okay, I get it. So it would change the integrity of your mouth in a way that wouldn't be advantageous for you unless you were late stage. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Well, what I would add, go ahead, Leslie.
What I was going to say, and then Linda, help me out here, but what I was going to say is that as the health of the mouth changes, Eva, as we move from a healthy mouth to gingivitis and into various stages of periodontitis, the composition of the bacteria, the fungi, and the viruses in our mouth, as well as other organisms, changes as well. So we move from what is generally an aerobic environment, a group of organisms in a healthy mouth who really thrive and like an oxygenated environment. And then as we experience more disease in the mouth, what we begin to develop, and I'm sure Linda will talk about this in just a second, are pockets. And those are when the gums come away from the teeth, and they help to create more of an anaerobic environment, one which does not depend on oxygen. And so logically, then, the composition of the organisms in the mouth changes as well. What do you say?
And what I would add to that is the difference between gingivitis, and this is really important, between gingivitis, which is just simply an inflammation of the gums, and periodontitis, is that it has moved, in periodontist, it has moved beyond the gums to the bone around the teeth. It is the bone that cements those teeth into our jaw. It is the workhorse of our entire chewing system, is that bone support. I would compare that to the foundation on a home. So if you pull a couple blocks out of your foundation under a home, you're in trouble. If your home is, if your home's built on sand or you get termites, you're in bigger trouble. And what happens is, as we move from gingivitis into periodontitis, we get those bad bugs of microbiology. It's not the normal stuff we're supposed to have in our mouth, that actually those bacteria are good. We don't want a sterile mouth. The good bacteria help us kick off digestion. They signal our stomach and our digestive process, and they help us begin to break down our food. So as the bacteria moves to a more virulent or wicked type of germ in gum disease, it is going to call for different therapies. But what I would add to that is, if someone has gum disease, they are losing bone. Bone will not grow back. Typically, there is tartar or buildup underneath the gum that needs to come out, and you can't take that out at home. So it's a combination of, when you've been diagnosed with gum disease, you definitely need treatment to get you on the right road. But you can treat the disease and then maintain health indefinitely. You can keep your teeth for a lifetime. It's not going to resolve on its own. You can't get the tartar off out from under the gum without a dental professional, but then you can move on. So if our gums are losing, if our teeth are losing bone support around them, it's disappearing, okay? The gums make like a turtleneck around the teeth, but if you envision that turtleneck attached around the neck of the tooth or the base of the tooth, if we were to measure from the top of that turtleneck to that attachment, that's called the pocket area. Generally, we consider 3 and below to be healthy if it's not bleeding when it's measured. And as we get bone loss, those pockets can go from 4 to 5 all the way up to 10 millimeters. Someone with a 10-millimeter pocket or extensive bone loss probably has loose, mobile teeth and is beginning to have painful situations. But if you envision, when you brush and floss your teeth, it is impossible to get 6 millimeters below the gum tissue. So what happens is, you may be able to reach 3 to 4 millimeters and clean all that plaque or biofilm or bacteria out of that 3 or 4 millimeter area. But if you have a 6-millimeter pocket, those anaerobic, like Leslie said, or oxygen-hating germs really thrive down there. It's quiet, it's dark, it's 98.6, it's moist and full of nutrients. So it almost goes like wildfire. So the big thing is ideally you want to prevent gum disease. But if you suspect you have gum disease, or you do have gum disease, don't be discouraged. You can have treatment based on your particular situation and easily go back to a maintenance, which is a prevention of it coming back. The bone won't grow back, but you can keep those gums healthy and arrest that bone loss and keep your teeth for the rest of your life.
And there are a lot of predisposing factors for periodontal disease, eh, Linda? Like, sometimes they could be medications. Because of the side effects of medication, or certain systemic conditions like diabetes. Some people are predisposed because of hormonal fluctuations, like
nutritional deficiencies.
For example, in pregnancy, right?
Nutritional deficiencies, et cetera. Genetics are a predisposing factor as well.
That was going to be my question.
As well as, for example, consuming alcohol and sugar, or smoking. And that's not just smoking tobacco, but also pipes, organic tobaccos, of course, chews, snuff, or smoking cannabis.
Interesting. So that was a question I was about to ask you. You know, there's a big hoopla going on in the world right now about methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase. which, you know, brings along with it heart disease and diabetes, or not brings along with it, you know, but is indicative of, which brings me back to those molars and problems that go on under those molars. Are you familiar with that MTHFR stuff that's going on?
I have heard of it. I would not call myself an expert on it.
Nor would I.
Let's just talk about the molars then. It's an issue really where you can't methylate your B vitamins, particularly B vitamins, other things too, but particularly B vitamins. So tell us what we do, what would we do to target, to fix those or prevent those molars for the people who haven't come down the road like I have? How do you know? I mean, I went probably, I had a root canal in my 20s and went back probably 6 months ago, and my doctor said, man, you have a failing root canal, and that probably contributed to your heart attack. How do people know?
Well, typically when we... Go ahead.
I was just going to ask before you answer, Linda. Eva, what was your oral health like in terms of your daily care of your mouth? Because that's an important part of what we discuss in the book.
I'm a fanatic.
And how to intervene on a day-by-day basis.
I'm a fanatic. I mean, I floss, I clean my teeth, I go to the dentist every 6 months. I mean, I'm a fanatic. I'm a health food fanatic. So I was really, 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 really kind of shocked, I guess. You know, but I went to dentists back then who weren't holistic. When I had the root canal redone, we used ozone, and we used laser on it. So it's different kind of care for me now, but a lot of people don't know about that care, so I don't. But how should I have known that something was brewing underneath those teeth? And now, when I personally look back, I realize that I had some awareness there on that one tooth. You know, there was some. You know, if I thought about it, I had some feeling there that I didn't have on the rest of my teeth. So, how would you describe that to my listeners? And what would they do about it?
Sure. What I would tell you is there's a lot of reasons why a root canal is recommended on a tooth. If decay penetrates to the pulp or nerve, the live part of that tooth inside, then that pulp becomes infected. That is a guaranteed root canal. Once that pulp is sick or dying or diseased, it has to come out. So they recommend a root canal to remove that diseased tissue. Sometimes there's a fracture that goes down to the pulp of the tooth. Sometimes there is an accident where it's broken off completely to expose the nerve of the tooth. Once the nerve is exposed, there's nothing we have that you can kind of just cover it back up and say it's going to be okay. That's when it has to come out. And oftentimes there's abscesses that happen and we don't know why. They happen for no good reason on a tooth that's never had decay, never had work, never had a trauma. They just kind of happen. Sometimes on occasion, if it's an upper molar, there's a suspicion and sometimes a connection that if those roots penetrate that maxillary sinus, your sinuses that get infection, if you have chronic sinus infections, that those bacteria can reach the nerve of the tooth and cause an abscess. Sometimes you just don't know. But if you have an abscess and you had a root canal done, typically the statistics that we see most often is 90 to 95% of root canals are successful, which means they never give another problem later. But there are some complications that can happen, and there are teeth that can reinfect or never really heal an abscess. Typically, you have discomfort. Something doesn't feel right. And I would say follow your instinct. If something doesn't feel right or you're feeling a sensation, a pressure, a heat, a swelling, a sensitivity, especially if you put a warm compress and it makes the discomfort worse, that's indicative that there's an abscess. So just having the root canal done doesn't guarantee, because there are those few that do, and unfortunately, Eva, that sounds like you had one, that do not completely heal over, and they just brew a continuing infection there. And that can be identified with an X-ray.
Go ahead. it cracked.
A crack, yep. When you have a fracture.
This was the I had the original fracture, then I had a root canal, then I had another repair of that root canal about 8 years ago, and then I just had it redone again now. So it's like the systemic thing down in there.
Yeah. The fractures are the toughest. Mm-hmm. Because the fracture, if you figure if there's a fracture in the tooth or was a fracture in the tooth, contaminants can travel into the tooth via that fracture.
So let's take because that option there. Oh, go ahead.
I was simply going to say, because each tooth is connected by its individual blood supply to the rest of the body, so with the introduction of a crack, we're allowing microorganisms in the mouth to make their way into the blood supply and then travel throughout the body.
That makes so much sense. So let's talk about go ahead.
I was going to say, even in many respects, you were very, very lucky in what you've experienced, because you listened and you were able to identify and recognize that something wasn't right in the mouth. But isn't it right, Linda, that in most cases when we're talking about periodontitis, there is no pain or discomfort, and that's one of the reasons why we need to not only attend to our mouths on a daily basis, but also work with healthcare professionals?
Exactly, and that's when I laundry list those symptoms, I always put that out there. It is painless until you're in the advanced stages. Usually, by the time you feel pain or a loose tooth, it's too late. You can't lose all the bone that holds your teeth in. Gums alone will not hold your teeth in. So pain is not a good identifier for gum disease. Pain usually comes in with abscesses, like fractures, or extensive decay. Even tooth decay in the early stages is not painful. So it's really good to have regular dental exams to find those problems and address them when they're small. And say you're a person that goes in and has a cavity every 6 months, then you know your issue is decay. So we look at your diet. Is your diet acidic? How are you cleaning your teeth? What is your nutrition? What kind of beverages are you drinking? If you're a person that is prone to a lot of tartar buildup, you definitely want to get in before it gets deep under the gum and have that taken out. And if you're diabetic or you've had bone loss in the past, then you may not be good enough to come in at every 6 month intervals. You may want to be a little safer than sorry and come in at 3 or 4 month intervals, because then you can catch things early before they go sideways. And with anything in dentistry or medicine, prevention is the best. If you have to have treatment, the earlier, the better, the easier, and the less expensive it is.
And that's why, as a herbalist, I work with not only herbs for medicinal use, but also herbs for culinary use, diet, and work with individuals on a holistic basis, because it really is the whole person. It is not just the tooth. You know, it seems to be a new idea, really, that we're able, willing, and ready to take control of the health of our mouths.
We've got about 15 minutes. If you guys would, I'd like for you to talk about, give us the three stages. I guess it's three stages, right? Is that right?
Periodontitis?
Yes, the three different stages, or whatever that, however you phrase it. And tell us one thing that you would do for it. If it's the herbal thing, what herbs would it be for each stage? And before we finish up today, I want you guys both to be sure to tell us where people can find you, because we didn't do that at the beginning like we normally do. And how to contact you if people want to make. Do you do phone consultations?
Yeah,
I do phone consultations. Okay. So let's be sure and cover that before you get through. So you've got 15 minutes. If you would tell us specifically a concoction that you would blend up to address those you know, one period of each stage. I hope that makes sense.
Hey, Linda, yep. What do you say yep. if we start with healthy teeth and talk about
exactly.
what they look like
yep.
and then
yep.
move our way through?
Got it.
Okay.
Healthy gums don't okay. bleed when you brush or floss. They have that orange peel effect when you look up close to them. That means there's no inflammation. They're usually a light pink color, a coral pink color. They're not red. Some ethnic groups may have some small coloration splotchiness. That's okay. So healthy gums don't bleed. They look good. And Leslie can give us some tips on some ideal prevention and good strategies for maintaining health.
So, for example, we can work with pastes or powders to maintain our oral health on a day-by-day basis, and we give recipes for that in those in dental herbalism. But in terms of brighteners or rinses and mouthwash, we can look to age-old traditional herbs such as sage and thyme. Sage in particular is anti-inflammatory and antimicrobial, and also fresh sage leaves when used directly on the teeth as a sort of massage, as a buffer, help to whiten teeth. These can also be brewed, both sage and thyme or cinnamon and clove or peppermint for a bit of variety, can be brewed according to taste as herbal infusions and allowed to cool and then used as mouthwashes. And these might also be effective in the early stages of gingivitis. Over to you.
In gingivitis, this is when you want to catch gum disease starting, because it's completely reversible. If you have just gingivitis, you can get it addressed and go right back to health. No harm, no foul, no bone loss. Gums are red. They may bleed when you brush or floss. And you're not going to be able to measure your gum pockets at home, so you have to get into a dental professional and have an exam so you can see what's going on. You can find out where you are. And I will add this, Eva, that oftentimes with my patients that I treat, they may have a section of healthy gums. Over here on the other side, I'm seeing a little gingivitis, but then diagonal down on the other corner, I'm seeing some periodontitis. So it's not like it's a tide of an ocean lowering and raising, that it's happening everywhere at the same rate. It's very varied quite a bit throughout the mouth oftentimes. So what you want to do is you want to find out if you have gingivitis, and you want to get that reversed right away before it progresses.
That's such a great point, Linda. And, you know, most of us think of the mouth as a single entity, and so many things can be going on, indeed, tooth adjacent to tooth. You know, the health of the gums surrounding a lateral incisor and a central incisor could be very different indeed. And in cases of gingivitis, we might look to herbs such as raspberry leaves or berry leaves in general. I certainly like to use red raspberry or blackberry leaves brewed as an infusion. And to that, I might add some calendula and yarrow. And as well, living in northwestern PA, I rely heavily on both plantain and golden seal. So those would be herbs that I would look to in during gingivitis.
And you just doing a tea is sufficient, or does it need to be put in an oil, or what's the best way to do this? Does it matter?
I prefer using a tea, which some people call an infusion, and for example, taking the flowers of calendula, which are blooming here now, and mixing those with the leaves and the flowers of yarrow and the leaves of plantain. And I might infuse those by pouring boiling water over these herbs into a mug and allowing them to steep for a specific period. And then adding to that, in some cases, perhaps in the later stages of gingivitis or early stages of periodontitis, some echinacea tincture, which is an alcohol-based root extract in my case. What about early periodontitis? Perhaps we should talk about the signs and symptoms of that. That's
right.
Where inflammation is pretty apparent, isn't it, Linda?
Yes. This is where it's moved beyond the gums into the ligaments that connect the tooth into the bone. The bone is starting to be affected. A lot's going on down under the gums, and the sad part is usually you don't even know. We typically classify periodontitis into three stages, early, moderate, and advanced. Advanced, we're in a whole other animal here. So talking about early to moderate periodontitis, we have the more virulent bacteria. Your teeth may start looking longer because that bone is shrinking away. The bacteria are starting to really take a toll on the bone and the ligaments and the supporting structures. Now, unfortunately, at home, you can't take an x-ray to measure your bone level. You can't take a periodontal probe to measure six measurements around each tooth to find out what your gum pockets are. So this is where it is important to go get a dental exam, find out what's going on, where it's going on in your mouth, and take care of it. But we have the more virulent bacteria. You may be noticing bad breath that never seems to go away. You still have the bleeding, but it's still a painless process. The only other thing I would say to some people is when the chronic inflammation is going on, sometimes those tissues become swollen, and that does, by nature, reduce the blood flow to those tissues. So sometimes they can, instead of having a pink color, they can get almost like a cyanotic blue or purple to it. And that is actually oxygen deprivation to those tissues during the disease process.
Oh, that sounds frightening to have that. Oh, okay. So,
you know, one of the things Linda and I are able to do in dental herbalism, Eva, is to hopefully allay fears. I mean, here we're focusing on disease and we're focusing on intervention, but in some of the work we all do, we realize that people have concerns about seeing healthcare professionals because they worry that something is going awry, or they've had a negative experience, or they don't know where to go, or for financial reasons. And we implore people to at least once a year see a healthcare professional and to begin to look into the health of the mouth. But please, we hope we're not scaring your audience.
So could you give us some pointers for whitening? Because everybody's out there using those whiteners that I personally don't know that's such a good idea. So what do you recommend?
Go ahead.
We have about 5 minutes, 7 minutes probably.
One of the easiest ways to whiten the teeth is with sage. Fresh garden sage leaves can be taken off a plant as needed and used directly. And we simply use these as little buffing cloths, moving tooth by tooth, surface by surface. And just a word of caution, herbs work slowly, so a single application isn't going to result in an extremely white, bright smile. But daily consecutive care, which is really what we're about when it comes to the health of the mouth, but daily care using sage leaves, Salvia officinalis, will result in a change in the brightness of the enamel.
And tell me again how you do it. I'm not sure I understood that.
Okay. So you just stroll outside and you find yourself a sage plant. Now, many gardeners will grow sage. It's a perennial here in northwestern Pennsylvania, and it grows quite easily. And we walk up to the plant, and we simply remove a single leaf. And I suppose one of the things that's wonderful is to be appreciative that we can grow
all of these herbs for the mouth in our garden. And sage is a real gardener's friend. So with a fresh sage leaf held between the thumb and the forefinger, what we do is we simply then bring it up to the mouth and touch the leaf to the tooth and then apply a gentle pressure and rub in a circular motion. And we move tooth by tooth, quadrant by quadrant in a logical manner. And thereby, this action, this rubbing action of the sage leaf and the oils in the sage leaf helps to brighten the mouth.
That's too easy.
I would add to that, Eva, that any of the herbal recipes in dental herbalism, as far as mouth rinses or toothpaste, baking soda can be added as an extra benefit as an additional stain remover. So if you drink a lot of tea or you drink coffee or you have a lot of blueberries and they stain your teeth, you can add baking soda to any of the herbal recipes and all of their benefits to help reduce stain, thereby whitening the teeth as well.
And you can, is it okay to do that every day, or how do you do it? Because some, I've heard from other people that it'll wear your teeth away, but that's not true.
That is not
true. Are you talking about sage?
Yes, the baking soda is not as abrasive as the toothpastes are. It has an RDA value of 7, which is very, very low. And how I can kind of make a visual picture for you is if you have a rock in your left hand, it's very hard. If you have a piece of chalk in your right hand, you can squeeze it. It feels very hard, but it crumbles. It breaks down very easily. A lot of people feel the crystalline or chunky structure of those big baking soda molecules and think that they're too abrasive. But actually, on abrasive scale testing, it is one of the lowest abrasive things that you can put on your teeth.
Okay, well, that's wonderful to know. Okay. All right, so we have about 3 or 4 minutes. You guys want to make sure that we know where we can find you and where to buy your books and how to contact.
Of course.
You.
Thanks for giving us a minute to talk about that. We're
My
appreciative
pleasure.
Very much. So as a herbal consultant, I'm based in Franklin, Pennsylvania. Eva, you'd asked if I do distance consults, and I do. So people listening to your show can contact me by emailing me at leslie@dentalherbalism.com. And also they can go on the web to dentalherbalism.com to order our book, or they can go directly to either Amazon or Barnes & Noble or our publishers, Healing Arts Press, Inner Traditions, or Simon & Schuster, or links for each of those resources can be obtained from our website. And thanks very, very much for having us this evening.
It is my pleasure, and I want to tell Marie, I don't know what this book costs, but it is well worth whatever it is that it costs to get the information in this book to take care of your teeth. I thank you both for being with us, and I hope you'll come back sometime and talk about this fabulous book that you did, because it really is worth the effort and worth the money to buy a copy. Thank you. And did you say on there how we could reach you?
That you
Linda?
Can go to www.dentalherbalism.com. There is a contact form to contact us directly, and you can either reach Leslie at leslie@dentalherbalism.com. And Linda@dentalherbalism.com. And all of our information is right there on our website, very easy to navigate.
Excellent. Thank you, ladies, both, for being with us tonight. Hope you'll come back. Good
Thank
night.
You, Eva.
Thanks, Eva.